Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, August 18th, 2022. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you, Melody? Happy National Fajita and Pinot Noir Day.
Oh, is that the same as Happy Wine Day?
Well, yeah, same thing. I guess you know what I'm having for dinner tonight. Yes.
Well, let me guess. That's it?
Fajitas and Pinot Noir.
Oh, fajitas.
That's all.
Okay, that's it? That's all you got?
That's all.
Oh, you're slipping there, my friend.
Yep.
Well, we'll wait in anticipation the next time which would be Tuesday. Just waiting. So you better have a good one come Tuesday. But anyway,
I'll do my best.
Because I got to give you a hard time, you know.
I don't know that, but yeah. Hey.
But I had to give gold a little bit of a hard time, too. It certainly gave us a hard time. Down $2 right now in the New York spot price aftermarket at $1,760. It was higher on the day by $13. Couldn't hold. So $1,760. Silver today was down 23 cents. It did break down 19.65. Platinum was down 13 at 921, but palladium did manage to be up 2238. The USDX today was much stronger, 0.77. We're back up over the 107 at 0.43. Crude oil pushed back up $2.50 at 90.64. Paper markets today, everything was pretty much just barely higher. The Dow, 18 points, just about ready to touch 34,000. S&P was up 9 at 42.83. NASDAQ was up 27 at 12.965. So they're all ready to see. Asia, all of Asia was negative. But pretty much everything, I mean, the Nikkei was just shy of 1% to the downside. That was the biggest mover. But Europe, they're all happy over there. They don't care what's going on. They don't care what their inflation rates are. They don't care about possibly not having energy to work through the winter. They don't care about a lot of things. But their stock market is higher across the board. The bonds 10-year yield 2.87%, down 0.18, I should say. Let's see what, natural gas was down 9.215. It just barely moved. But we did see 3% on Brent. And, of course, as I mentioned, almost 3% on WTI. So a lot of things are happening. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about it here later on in our segments. But, it's so funny. You know, Dave, we talk about recession. We're going to talk about the housing market here soon. But I just have to bring this up so I don't want to miss it. But the big headline is, you know, the housing market is in a recession, not the whole economy. Now they're going to take segment by segment by industry. Well, they're in a recession, but we're not. So good. You know, it's kind of funny. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started. As I said, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. And looks like the Fed's daily is pushing back on dialing back rate hikes. You know, that's a big question. Will they or won't they? And Federal Reserve officials agreed last month on the need to eventually dial back the pace of interest rate hikes. But they want to see how their monetary tightening is towards curbing inflation. Now, this was all according to the last month's minutes of the FOMC meeting, policy meeting. Analysis by Bloomberg Economics suggested that the Fed has lost control of inflation and that the cost of bringing it back on target may well be a recession. Today, San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly said that the Fed should raise interest rates a little above 3% by the end of the year to cool inflation, pushing back against investors' bets that officials would then reverse course. We need to get the rate up, she said, up to neutral at least, which is around 3%, but likely to restrictive territory. You know, and there you have it. But I remember when we were at 3% before, Dave, the House of Cards began to fall. And so therefore they started lowering them once again all the way down to, oh, you know, all the way down, Dave.
Oh. Well, it's interesting. Daly doesn't have a vote on the FOMC this year. They rotate on and off. She said her base case is for a half percentage point hike in September, but insists she has an opened mind about a larger increase. Said we have a lot of work to do at the Fed to bring us back to price stability. We want to not have this idea that we have this large hump-shaped rate path where we will ratchet up really rapidly this year and then cut aggressively next year. The pricing in interest rate futures shows that investors betting the Fed will ease policy by about 40 basis points over the course of next year after rates peak at 3.65%, suggesting, at least in the futures market, there's a lot more rate hiking left on future agendas. So, you know, at least another half a point in September, followed by, who knows, in November, 25 right now seems to be the consensus. But there's a lot of data that's coming out between now and then. So who the heck knows, Melody?
Well, you know, you're right. Who the heck knows? And my question is, what's it going to do anyway? I mean, they're going to try to do this trend thing. They're raise and lower. And it's just, they're between that rock and the hard place. And somebody asked me today, you know, that they believe that the Fed will start quantitative easing here pretty soon once again. They never stopped. They're just cutting back. They're still doing it. Am I correct, Dave?
You mean in terms of what they're buying?
They're not buying as much, but you're still buying.
Well, they're not buying anything new. Mm. They're, you know, some of the longer term maturities that are out there, they're letting expire, and they're just not taking them out again. I mean, that's how they're going to get down from 8.9 trillion to, well, wherever they end up. It'll be interesting. It'd be a good question to ask in Jackson Hole when they had their annual retreat out there at the end of this month, August 25th, 6th, and 7th. Someone ought to ask them that. Are you still buying? You know, it's hard. It's hard to say unless you really drill down and look at some of the detailed reports.
Alrighty. Well, that's what we should do and find out. And I thought they were still buying some stuff, still pumping money into the system. You know, we haven't talked about the overnight lending. You know, they're still doing that probably. But, and they're supposed to be so transparent. Mm-hmm. Initial filings for unemployment benefits declined slightly last week. Jobless claims totaled 250,000 for the week, down a few thousand from the previous week. So looking at the four-week moving average for claims, fell by 2,700. And so, you know, that continuing claims, which, you know, kind of run behind a headline number, totaled 1.437 million, but that's an increase of 7,000, Dave.
Yeah, well, this is This is the area to keep focused on, I think, more important than say GDP. This the labor market in general, of which jobless claims is just one piece of it. But we know the Fed has been looking to cool this market as part of its tightening of credit, the interest rate hikes, drawing liquidity out of the market through QT. It appears to be trending slightly. I mean, they call it edging, toward their goals, but I think they're a long way. The thing to remember is that there's always going to be mixed signals. I'm not sure that's the right word, but as long as they focus on the headline unemployment rate, which in my mind is nearly irrelevant, the only thing it is consistent with how they've been characterizing the job market over the years. But to the extent that one of their dual mandates is maximum or full employment, and of course, defining that is certainly an interesting ball game. Some historically, pick a percentage out of the sky. It's been 4 to 5%. Not sure a lot of economists would still agree with that. But here's my point: if it is 4 or 5%, even let's pick the higher number, 5%. Headline unemployment is 3.6. Right now, that's crazy. Two jobs advertised, two job openings for every unemployed worker out there. Come on, you got to look at the U6 number, and even then, that's just more short term discouraged workers. But at least the U6 rate, is a better reflection of what is really out there. And that's, closer to 7%, 6.7, I think it was last time. So, 6.7 is a far cry, above 5, as opposed to 3.6 being below 5, the maximum employment goal. So, it complicates everybody's jobs, Melody. The Fed tells us they know what they're looking at. They know what they're doing. They know where
they don't have a clue.
But for the rest of us, we're left, I think, to scratch our heads.
Well, trust me, they are too. And I think they know they're between a rock and a hard place, and they're just doing whatever they can just to keep everybody calm until after the elections. It's the election year, so who knows? Who knows? But I do know when we read these various reports, they're so conflicting. Here we got one about Philly Fed manufacturing outlook. It actually, that one improves, but yet just a couple days ago, New York manufacturing suffers near record plunge. So how's that all work, ladies and gentlemen? It doesn't. So no one will ever talk about the New York manufacturing, but they'll all hang on to the Philly Fed. I mean, what is the difference? How can one rise? So the Philly Fed monthly manufacturing index rose to 6.2 this month from negative 12.3 in July. Nobody was expecting that. Usually when nobody is expecting something, that means they probably are stretching the numbers a little bit. But anyway, that represents the percentage difference between companies expecting expansion versus contraction. It improved from July's reading, which had been the lowest since May of 2020. The rebound indicated only modest growth in the current pace of output, and new orders declined for a third straight month. So there's that. Firms on balance had also remained pessimistic about the near-term outlook. The survey's future indexes rose slightly, but continue to suggest that companies expect overall decline 6 months from now. So there you have it, Dave.
Well, analysts are trying to read some good news into this report from an inflation perspective, saying, the prices paid index hit its highest level since 1979 earlier this year, but the August report showed it tumbling for the fourth straight month to the lowest, actually, since December 2020. Prices paid index down nearly 50% from April's high, but still is about twice the level that we saw throughout 2019 before the pandemic began. I think that's an interesting indicator. Similar survey on Monday from the New York Fed showed an index falling 40 points.
Mm-hmm.
Suggesting the business conditions were deteriorating. So, you've got to pay an awful lot of attention and look between the lines at a lot of the details here to have a clue as to what's going on. Part of the problem is, we talk about these numbers every month or whenever they come out, and it's just so hard to see them. I mean, I think that's viewing these figures in a vacuum, and unless we're looking at the long term trend. That's got to be a minimum 6 months. I'm not sure how meaningful the numbers are. But
I think when you have slight changes, you're right. They're not really meaningful because, you're on a trend and, you're going to have ups and you're going to have a little bit of downs and, little adjustments along the way. But when they fall significantly, like the New York did on Monday, you got to pay attention to that. Because something was behind that. That is, something to pay attention to. It's just not a one-month wander. And so you do have to ask yourself, but I would think that it would have a little more. We can't be at break already. We just started the program.
Todd, I'm telling you, he's pushing that.
I know. What is happening to these clocks? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you at
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter and blog produced by our own Dave Allen. Heading into the break, we're just going to touch briefly. The drought is unbelievable, and I think, some of the biggest stories is the water problem that they're having out west in, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. And, it's just amazing what is happening out there. And, they're trying to blame everything on climate change and everything else, and I'm thinking about, what about growth? Look what has happened to that cities in those towns, the expansion. And you get all that heat and the macadam and the cement and those big buildings, and you create heat islands in these larger areas where you already have temperatures that are normally anywhere from, 105 to 115 during the summertime in Phoenix and, in those deserts and so forth. So, there's been arguments and fights over that water for years. So it's not like it's new. So, but they're going to blame climate change on most everything, I believe. But it's really, so we keep seeing these grain prices drop. And, even though more than half of the lower 48 states remain in a drought. That's a good thing. If it keeps up, though, the decline in wheat, corn, and soybean prices could ease the rise in food costs. Over the last 3 months, prices for wheat, corn, and soybeans are down significantly, 35%, 25%, and 17%, respectively. That's a pretty big turnaround. First, you have fears of the economic slowdown that's sort of weakening demand, particularly in China. They are the world's largest soybean consumer, but they could also be buying soybeans somewhere else. I don't know if those are our prices or the world prices, Dave. Down 35, 25, and 17%.
I think they're here.
Just here. So next, rainfall over the past few weeks, it sort of eased dry conditions, but it's still very, very drought conditions in those out there, Dave.
Yeah. Well, with reports of grain shipments out of the Black Sea area again from Russia and Ukraine, that's taken some of the panic pricing out of that market, the wheat market, that is. But again, the drought here still matters, especially to farmers in the deep south and west. Cotton farmers in areas like Texas are expected to literally walk away from 12 million plus acres of previously planted fields for lack of moisture. They'll count on some of those government subsidies to get them through this tough time. You got the canned tomato crop in California is getting crushed. So expect your Del Monte and other brand stewed tomatoes, chopped tomatoes, whatever. If you can find them in the next 6 months, expect prices to be up there, right?
Yeah, you would think, and I think a scario scenario is not being there.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not have some more baby formula pushing out into other industries.
Well, we'll see what happens, but I guess Germany has taken a hint from the U.S. A lot of states have lowered or taken off the state taxes on gasoline, and I guess Germany is going to do the same thing on their natural gas to ease the pressure that people are struggling with, energy costs. The announcement at a hastily convened news conference in Berlin comes after Scholz met with hostile protests during a town hall event outside the Capitol. So I guess you can scare those guys into doing something. Mm-hmm. Rising gas prices are a big burden for many citizens. Of course it is. It takes a lot to figure that one out. Adding that further measures would be announced in the coming weeks. So we've seen... not quite sure what they're going to do for winter yet. That's the key thing, because we know that Russia has reduced their natural gas flows used to generate electricity, run factories and heat homes in the winter to Germany and other EU countries. And so, again, the resulting high prices have been fueling rising inflation, eroding people's spending power, and, of course, you know, the R word, recession. Dave.
Big recession. Yeah, Scholz said lowering the tax on natural gas from 19% to 7%. Boy, that's a two-thirds reduction virtually. Meaning they'll be, they'll be paid for from government coffers. German leaders said the issue was a matter of justice, to ensure that the country remains united during this crisis. German agency reported that the protests that Melody alluded to were organized by the far-right Alternative for Germany and the Left Party. Experts, however, were questioning whether this tax reduction is the right measure, given that the German government's also trying to get its people to use less gas. Steph Kuth's at the Kiel Institute says gas is in very short supply at the moment, and that's why prices are so high. And in such a situation, he adds, it's not appropriate to water down price signals through state intervention in the tax rules. Well, however you view this action, it certainly wouldn't be the first time a government has not done the smart thing in dealing with a crisis, Melody.
Absolutely. You know, it's the U.S. is going to hold trade talks with Taiwan, and but we continue to get warnings from Beijing that they will take action if necessary to safeguard Taiwan's its sovereignty. The announcement of trade talks comes from after Beijing fired missiles into the sea to intimidate Taiwan after Pelosi visited the island earlier this month. And the Chinese government criticized the planned talks as a violation of its stance that Taiwan has no right to foreign relations. It warned Washington not to encourage the island to try to make its de facto independence permanent. China firmly opposes this. Taiwan's military also held a drill today with missiles and cannons simulating a response to a Chinese missile attack. And but, you know, what we've talked about here before, of course, the U.S. is going to hold trade talks with Taiwan. I mean, that's why there's a lot of speculation that she took her son with her in order to talk to these Asian companies in order to open up trade. And I believe one of her sons, if not the one that went with her, has Chinese investments and investments over there as we speak. So, you know, it's just the same old thing, Dave.
Yeah, just another, I think, probably a much to do about nothing, but, you know, you keep rattling a saber and for long enough, and soon the other side thinks, well, I got to do something more substantive, something more than symbolic. And that's when accidents can happen. And that's what I'm sure that everyone's thinking about. But I'm not sure that China really you know, would go beyond what it's been doing. Of course, you know, it's off a video after it was of two Taiwanese women standing on the shoreline of their country with their backs to the ocean, and there in the background were Chinese missiles exploding. And can you imagine sitting on the edge of the Atlantic in the beaches of Delaware or Maryland, Melody, and there just off into the distance is, you know, a big cloud of smoke from Russian subs or whatever, you know, just testing out another missile. I mean, it's got to be a little alarming to some, but I guess when you don't, you know, live in these areas, you know, it often looks like they're just taking it with a grain of salt, the folks who live there.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, it's you know, you're right, and it only takes one little error to make something happen or to misunderstand, lack of communication, and, you know, you get the wrong words. Do mean a lot, ladies and gentlemen, but it's hard to believe that we're going to hold more trade talks with Taiwan, just kind of pushing our finger into them and for the possibly to enhance the wealth of another politician. And it's just, you know, it's just the same old thing, just the same. It'd be really sad if we had to go to war over something like that, you know. And I'm not just, it's probably almost every politician in D.C. makes some sort of, you know, family gains. We know this. You know, we've certainly seen, you know, with the Bidens, we've even seen it with Trump. Trump's son walked away with billion-dollar deals with the Saudis after they left office and so forth. And, you know, so usually it's off limits. Usually you don't talk about, you know, what the families do either after or during. It's illegal, but they do it anyway. So, even if, since we're overseas and we're talking about these countries, I guess Turkey shocks the financial markets a little bit. They're looking at their inflation at 80%, and their lira slid 1% against the dollar index, trading at more than 18 to the greenback after the news, and it's near a record low. So, you know, but, you know, one might say it's another idiotic move. And, again, these central banks are just doing whatever they can to, I don't know if Dave, if they're just trying to show that they're trying to do something just to keep calm, or they just don't know what to do. And
well, if inflation's at 80% and their central bank and just cut.
I know.
Interest rate. I mean,
I know. But, you know.
There.
No.
We'll have to see what happens to the lira over the next few months. Maybe they're onto something that the rest of us don't know.
I don't know. But it's just 80% inflation. That's amazing. But it's not the first country that's gotten that high, and most likely it'll go higher. But
yeah, this is on a scale of approaching Venezuela in terms of the impact to the people. They earn a lot less money than Americans do on average. When you hear that 5 years ago their currency was trading at just 3.5 to the dollar, now it's more than 18 to 1. Whew. That weakening is going to make life pretty miserable all around over there.
Well, you know, it's interesting is because you have Turkey and you have Ukraine meeting. Turkey's president and the head of the UN met with Ukrainian President Zelensky. They're trying to ratchet down the war that's been going on for 6 months, boost desperately needed grain exports, secure the safety of Europe's biggest nuclear power plant. So they're trying to get along, and Erdogan has positioned himself as a go-between in efforts to stop the fighting. That ain't going to happen. But it's an effort, I guess, and to try to get things to go back to normal, which it never will be. But at least somebody is trying to sit down and go between. But I think everybody knows what Russia's, you know. But if they're at the table and they're talking, I guess that's a good thing. And would you like to add anything else to that?
No, not really. I'm just waiting for Russia to make an official move to annex the Donbass region of Ukraine, and that's when all craziness is going to diplomatic craziness is going to break loose in the region, and with Europe, NATO, and the U.S. But so far, it's just just continued fighting, continued posturing with both sides. So yeah, you hear something like this, it certainly can't hurt. And maybe persistent efforts, because it's happening on more than one front. I mean, Emmanuel Macron has been involved in trying to bring this to a head. Other things equal, maybe things wind down sooner than they otherwise would. But that doesn't mean it's anytime soon.
It's not going to be over for a long time. It's not going to be over until Russia wins, I believe, or he gets what he wants. But that's just my opinion. And if it doesn't ratchet up worse than that, to where they are right now. So, but anyway, we're heading into that second break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TeamUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business this final segment. She's at 1-800-375-4188. Not sure where I want to go start the third segment. There still a couple of interesting stories about happening overseas. Don't know if you saw this. A Saudi court sentenced a doctoral student to 34 years in prison for spreading rumors and retweeting dissidents. It's a decision that's drawn growing global condemnation. You know, activists and lawyers consider this sentence against Salma al-Shihab, who's a mother of two and a researcher at Leeds University in the UK, shocking even by Saudi standards of justice. So far unacknowledged, the ruling comes amid Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's crackdown on dissent, even as his rule granted women, Saudi women, the right to drive and other new freedoms in that ultra-conservative nation. Al-Shihab was detained during a family vacation in January last year, just days before she had planned to return to the UK. She told judges she had been held for almost 300 days in solitary confinement before her case was even referred to the court. There's more to this story, but we'll leave it at that to now. Remember, this is the kind of country that we're in bed with. South Korea's president says his government has no plans to pursue its own nuclear deterrent. Instead, he called for more diplomacy in the face of growing North Korean nuclear weapons capability, even as the North just test-fired two more suspected cruise missiles. The latest launches were detected from North Korea's western coast hours before South Korean President Sun Yuk-yeol used a news conference to urge Kim Jong-un, Pyongyang, to return to the table to exchange denuclearization steps for their own economic benefit. South Korea's military, which didn't reveal the launches until after those remarks by Yoon, provided no immediate details about the North's weapons, including how they moved or how far they traveled. But we do know that tensions could rise further as the U.S. and South Korea kick off their biggest combined military training exercise in a number of years next week to counter the ongoing North Korean threat. All right. Tim Giuliani of Alexandria, Virginia, writes, "It's disappointing to see yet another story that directly correlates the Fed raising rates and mortgage rates. Mortgages track the 10-year Treasury bond," he continues. "Reading the press these days, you'd think that every time the Fed raises rates by 75 basis points, mortgage rates go up by a similar amount. Well, Axios's Matt Phillips and Felix Salmon says Tim is right. Mortgage rates are based on longer-term interest rates. You can think of that as the yield on the 10-year Treasury note. Fed funds rate is essentially overnight trading. They're not based on that rate, which is what the Fed moves up and down when it makes its periodic monetary policy moves. They also say that Tim is right that the Fed short-term and long-term rates don't move in lockstep. In other words, a half-point interest rate increase from the Fed doesn't directly raise mortgage rates by a half point. So why have analysts said that the Fed rate hikes have helped push mortgage rates sharply higher, thus making purchasing a new home much more expensive? Well, because as the Fed began its rate hiking campaign, long-term interest rates started to shoot sharply higher. And it drug mortgage rates along with them. Now, we know financial markets by their nature are somewhat, if not a lot, mysterious. But the prevailing wisdom among certain academics in particular is that long-term rates should equal the expected return from keeping money overnight for that period. Plus another mystery ingredient known as the term premium, which we won't get into today. For over a decade after the Great Recession, the Fed tried hard to signal that overnight interest rates would be very close to zero for many years, and that helped bring long-term rates down. This year's sudden and large rate hikes, with the promise of more to come, have forced markets to radically recalibrate where they expect overnight rates to be over the next, well, 5-10 years or so. And thus, long-term rates have spiked. The bottom line? I mean, when the Fed wants to slow down the economy, it raises short-term rates with the hope that it will cause long-term rates, including mortgage rates, to rise. And while there isn't a one-to-one direct correlation between the Fed funds rate and mortgage rates, the idea behind raising the former is very much to raise the latter. And this time anyway, at least for now, it appears to be working. Now, earnings from retailers, together with fresh figures on port volumes and retail sales, are showing the effects of red-hot inflation on both consumer spending and the logistic networks that are trying to match frayed supply chains with shifting demand. You see Walmart, Target, and other big retailers are seeing consumer preferences shift to basic goods, including food and home essential, with overall prices being so high. At the same time, shoppers are putting the brakes on purchases of furniture and electronics and other big items compared with a year ago. Such changes in spending behavior, combined with over-ordering earlier this year by business, have left people who manage supply chains with a costly miss. Products that don't entice shoppers sit around unsold in stores and warehouses. That just takes up valuable space. Walmart, which saw inventory levels jump by almost one-third in the first quarter, canceled billions in orders and slashed prices on other items such as apparel. In the second quarter, it reduced the number of shipping containers in its system by one-half to match stockpiles with adjusted demand. And inventory growth slowed to 25% from a year earlier, compared with a 32% increase in the quarter before. Still, John Furner, who heads the company's U.S. operations, said that it's going to take a few more months to work through the backlog, just in time, hopefully, for the coming holiday season. Now, largest U.S. airlines, we've talked about, are earning profits again, and labor unions don't want them to spend it on stock buybacks. You might remember a condition of the $54 billion in federal aid that airlines received in 2020 to pay workers during the pandemic prohibits carriers from share buybacks. But that ban's only in effect through September 30th. And in a campaign and public petition that launched today, some of the largest airline unions are urging carriers to stabilize operations and invest in workers before spending on buying back their own stock. And collectively, those unions represent over 170,000 pilots, flight attendants, customer service reps, and other industry staff. One of them, Sarah Nelson, who heads the Association of Flight Attendants, said, "We can't allow executives to send one dime to Wall Street before they fix operational issues and conclude contract negotiations that will ensure pay and benefits that keep and attract people to aviation jobs." Campaign is also supported by a number of other major labor unions. The four biggest carriers here in the U.S., Delta, American, Southwest, and United, spent about $40 billion buying back their company stock between 2015 and the early days of the pandemic. Many of the workers represented by the unions whose employees work at these companies are advocating against a resumption of these buybacks. In addition to higher pay, unions are pushing airlines for more predictable schedules, particularly after last-minute airline cancellations have resulted in travel chaos, but also chaos for many of its workers. In addition, I would hope that some of these airlines are recruiting strongly to increase the numbers of their ranks. Part of the problem we hear and read about is that there just aren't enough pilots. There aren't enough of other staff on and off the airplanes. And that's adding to all this disruption on the ground. But hopefully these airlines take heed to this push. September 30th is coming pretty soon. That after that, they'll be allowed, airlines who took the money will be allowed to resume buybacks and dividends. Airline analyst at Raymond James said, given the economic uncertainty and perhaps even operations that are still not fully back to pre-pandemic levels, we don't expect any airlines to initiate dividends or buybacks this year. Well, we shall see. Here's an interesting story as we wind down today's program. Never again will most office workers spend 5-day, 40-hour weeks in office buildings jammed with humans. Yes, COVID will fade, but its legacy of habituating tens of millions of us to work from anywhere apparently isn't going anywhere, at least not too far. Welcome to the working world's virtual reality era. Before the pandemic began, office buildings were nearly full. Today, that figure's only about 40% occupied. Huge change. A slew of companies like Nationwide Insurance, Pinterest, Coinbase, Dropbox, and more have already permanently switched to remote first, shuttering most or all of their offices. Employers grappling with people working from home and a tight talent market, they now face what some have begun calling quiet quitting. The rising approach is work to live, instead of live to work. They're saying don't leave your job, but focus on fun, fulfilling activities outside of work while staying on the payroll. And that's Apparently far easier when you're working remotely and there's no pressure to show your face at the office from 9 to 5 or longer. Some workers are even using extra time to get multiple jobs, realizing that remote work means they can be mediocre at two jobs instead of good at one. This quiet quitting trend is starkly visible in Gallup's latest polling on worker engagement. Just 31% of workers born after 1989 say they're engaged at work. They're far less likely than their older counterparts to feel their work has a purpose other than providing a paycheck. Some are now seeing the effects of longer-term distributed work on the next generation of workers. Younger workers in particular are craving mentorship and camaraderie that they're not getting from the new world of work. So they're simply disengaging. So, what does it mean? Well, boosting engagement among younger workers doesn't equate to eroding their work-life balance and demanding more online hours. That'll probably turn the quiet quitters into real quitters. If CEOs and managers take away flexibility, workers are gonna bolt. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, Melody, tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout after the sunrise for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. As always, many thanks to our engineer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Have a good evening. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. And have a ball.